Let's talk jobs. Let's talk about Money Monday and your money with Tom Fortino of the Alpha Wealth Group. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing great, Anna. How are you doing?
All right. I got to ask you first. I don't know if you saw this story. Since you're a top investment guy, I want to ask you, is this a good investment? Did you see Michael Jordan's used boxers sold at auction for $2,784? Used, very used boxers is how they were described. Is that a good investment or a bad investment, would you say, Tom?
Well, I'll just stick to the term collectibles. Let's just talk about, you know, the different type of collectibles that are out there. You know, that's actually been a good market on a lot of levels. So, but as far as did you say the term was very used?
Very used. Let me make sure I get it right. Heavy use. Heavy use. Show signs of heavy use.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, to each their own, I guess. I would just talk about it in the whole reference of having collectibles in your whether it's paintings or stamps or whatever it might be, that's fine.
Coins, things like that?
Coins, yes. Gym shorts or trousers or whatever, undershorts. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I hear you. It's funny because they say that they did have a dry cleaning tag attached to them, so they are clean now, but that's what someone was willing to pay for those game-worn boxers. You know, but you raise an interesting point. There are these other sort of alternative investments, and some people are looking for those right now as ways to other places to move stuff around. Do you hear from clients about that?
Yeah, there's questions on that. I mean, for example, you hear a lot about these NFTs, right? These non-fungible tokens. And so that's kind of taking on a whole new area where there's a lot of money to be made and a lot of the investors are in. I'm not a fan so much of those. But other collectibles, yeah, I'm always, if someone is interested in something and it's worthwhile, you know, that's great. You're passionate about it and you can make money. That's a good thing. So I'm always a fan of good collectibles.
Mm-hmm. Do your research, I suppose, to make sure that
you
know, you're buying at the right price, I think, would be an issue.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and most people know that market. And so I have one client who actually, World War One. In fact, he was on a PBS show because he had some uniforms and some kits from World War One. And he's here in Illinois, had all those collectibles and very rare stuff that has some value to it. So it's really terrific. Plus, he's done a great job otherwise. But so I've seen it happen.
Mm-hmm. Hey, one of the things we've been talking about on the show today is the fact of burnout jobs that are out there, and that a lot of different professions are having difficulty keeping workers. Mm-hmm. They're having difficulty bringing in new workers, attracting new ones to replace those who have gone. Pharmacies are one of them. We had a pharmacist group on with us, a lot of healthcare stuff. We had so many submissions on the text line from people who are saying, hey, mine is too. Truck driver, teacher, so many others. I just wonder, this return to the workforce, Tom, that you and I have talked about periodically over the last year or so, I think it was envisioned that we would see more of these jobs filled at this point. What do you notice is going on?
Well, when you see the 11 million job openings, the highest it's ever been in our history, being unfilled, and then last week's job report, which, by the way, we're probably going to talk about Friday. This Friday, we're going to have another jobs report, which is a very important date. But 235,000 jobs were created in the August jobs report. They were expecting 720. So these are very concerning issues. In addition to that, one of the, I think, underlining there, when you look at the long term, this is 27 plus weeks. So imagine not working for 27 weeks. There's that's long-term unemployment. 3.2 million are in long-term unemployment. That's 2.1 million higher than pre-COVID. So there's just a lot of things in here that are very concerning, like you said, Anna, across the board, not just in one industry, but in a number of industries. So we'll see. We're going to see Friday. This is going to be an interesting report.
So the economy is not creating the jobs at the level we thought. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying the jobs. There's 11 million job openings out there. So there's plenty of jobs. You know, it's just in the unemployment, 8.4 million looking for jobs. If that's the unemployment number. So you can see there's more job openings than people looking for jobs. I mean, there's a confluence of so many things happening here. I think there's things that none of us really know about. Like, how is it going to happen from some of this remote? There's a lot to work out here from people working remote. from just getting through this whole issue with this new variant. There's just a lot of things. I think we may see a sea change, maybe a little dramatic, but a change in how people are going to be working going forward here.
Yeah, we've talked to Andy Challenger from Challenger Gray and Christmas, and one of the things he tells us, I asked him, hey, what are the jobs that are most difficult to fill? And I thought he'd say restaurant workers and hospitality. That's what I thought he would say. Instead, he said anything in person. There is such a desire for any worker mm-hmm. who's gotten a taste of the work from home, remote working situation to want to continue with that. He says those are difficult jobs to fill. I'm looking at Business Insider here, a poll, though, of people, what's stopping you from taking a new job, the feeling of burnout is high on the list. Compensation at available rates isn't adequate is another. The Delta variant, as you point out, and concerns about getting COVID, that's number one, two, and number three. I suppose, no surprise there, that's what you're hearing too.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I have, I was looking to hire someone here, and the feedback I got when I spoke with them, they said, well, do you want them to start tomorrow? I said, start tomorrow. I haven't even spoken to anyone. They said, you got that. If you don't offer them, if you don't start them tomorrow, you may lose them. And that's
really?
The response I was getting. Yeah, and so if it doesn't work out, fine. But it was kind of shocking when I started the search. You've got to hire them immediately. That was the response. So that's the reality of it, and I'm experiencing it myself.
Are you surprised at this point we are still dealing with that? I think if you asked people 6 months ago and the economists looking at this say, you know what, we see a kind of opening back up in the fall. I suppose no one predicted the Delta variant would take hold the way it has in some areas.
Well, I think that's some of it. But I also think that, and you've heard this before, I'm not the first, it's been said many times, you know, and we're fine. So this is why this jobs number is going to be interesting. You know, the extra unemployment paid by the federal government, the additional employment stopped, and it has stopped completely in most of these states now. So we're going to see how that impacts it. In addition to that, you know, this child credit where they're mailing out checks. Okay, so in other words, if you have three children under the age of 18, you could be receiving anywhere from $750 to $1,000 or more per month. It's coming right into your bank account. So I don't think these things have helped a lot. And so there's a number of things that are going on here that have not been helpful to, I guess, motivate people to look for jobs, unfortunately. So that doesn't help.
No, and I suppose it doesn't help the economy either. You need people to be working, producing, and making things get back to normal again. You would no doubt be looking at those numbers, too, how this contributes to our overall economy.
Absolutely. I mean, it can be problematic. I mean, they're talking about these ports of entry, right? You've got ships sitting outside of our major ports of entry, you know, because of trucking issues, because of COVID, that have been sitting there and won't be able to come into port for 3 weeks. You know, all of this impact that it's having on the economy, we know how it's impacting from the chip makers and the auto companies closing down, you know, trying to order something. So, you know, this, we're expecting some of this to go away. Some of my concerns are, yeah, maybe the supply interruptions may go away, but the inflation piece, that I don't know. That's a concern that I have, that I think inflation is going to be a problem going forward.
Okay, inflation, jobs, GDP, all those things are concerns. The market continues to go up, though there is volatility. Mm-hmm. I saw this Bloomberg headline. I want to get your take on it. They say everything is looking to be getting worse, so buy stocks, obviously. And the reason they said is the argument goes there still is no better alternative than U.S. stocks.
I agree.
Do you agree?
Well, I mean, I was having this conversation with someone earlier, too, but you know, these types of things, while they're not fundamentally sound, right? It's not fundamental that the Fed is printing $120 billion a month or buying bonds and mortgage-backed securities. These are not fundamentally good things, or that we're going to be adding more money to the economy continuously, or, well, I'm buying stock because there's no better. That's not the best thing. But we have to deal with what we're dealing with here. Do I think this year the stock market will continue to go? Yeah, I mean, I think we're still where you want to be invested. I'm thinking longer term. At some point, you know, the rubber is going to hit the road, and we're going to start to see either earnings. You know, earnings are going to be coming out over the next few weeks. So there's a lot of things happening over these next few weeks. The jobs report on Friday, earnings for the third quarter over the next few weeks. We're going to see a lot of things happening. The unemployment stops. How is that going to impact things? So I say, just see what happens over the next month or two. It's going to be interesting.
All right. And stay away from
Hopefully
celebrity
good.
Auction. I know. I hope so, too. You know, and stay away from the celebrity auction merchandise unless you just got a lot of money to kick around.
How are you going to argue with what that person made? Good for them. So.
Yeah, good for them, I suppose. Thanks, yeah. Tom. It's good hearing
All
from
right.
you.
All right,
Have
Anna,
a good one.
Care.
You ever think the thing you love to do on the side might become a source of money for you, a side gig, if you will, or maybe even your full-time employment? Nicole Lappin is a New York Times bestseller. She's a Northwestern grad, too. Love that about her. She's a financial news contributor to CNBC. You may have seen her on Bloomberg, Today Show, Good Morning America, so many others. And Nicole wrote this amazing piece about doing just that, turning a hobby into a jobby, like the thing you like to do on the side. Hey, Nicole, how you doing this afternoon?
And I go cats. Great to
go cats. Nice to speak with you, too. Been a while. I know you've been out in New York and doing you're very extremely busy with all of the financial contributing you do. I saw this and I thought, my gosh, this is something so many people during the pandemic have contemplated. If they never did before, we thought a lot about what it is we love doing, what provides that value and quality of life. And often, you know, you hear people who have these great hobbies. They'd love to do that as a way to make money. But where to start? Like, what advice do you give people?
So I would say the first step is to list out all the possibilities of all the things you've ever thought about doing. Do you like dancing? Put it on the list. Do you like talking on the phone? Seriously, put it on the list because you can make money that way. Are you a beer connoisseur? Put it on the list. Put everything on there. Look at the whole shebang and then see where you can actually make money. Because remember, having a hobby is much different than having a jobby, so to speak. The difference is that you have to make money from it. And sometimes realizing that you don't want to do something as a career is just as important as realizing you do want to do something. Because if people say, hey, you know, Anna Nicole, I love baking cupcakes. I bake cupcakes for all my friends. I have all these ideas for all these amazing flavors. And then you start seeing if you can actually make money from that. And it becomes less fun. You have to do accounting. You have to source flour. You have to do not all the stuff that's just baking and playing with frosting. Or clearly, I don't make cupcakes. So whatever goes into that is not as glamorous as you would think.
You know, that's interesting you put it that way, because then everything can become work, right? You can think, oh, I love doing this thing. But then as soon as you have to sort of put the parameters around it and say, this is how much I can spend exactly, this is how much I need to make off of it, this is how I market it and come up with budgets and things. You're right. It's not as glamorous or romantic as an idea, but it might make you more self-satisfied if it's truly what you love doing, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, that is priceless. And you want to understand, is it worth your time? You know, if you've been looking over a list of hobbies, you want to ask yourself, how much time do you actually have for a side hustle like this? And can you realistically stick to a schedule while also having a full-time job for the time being? I mean, people will look at Craigslist that started as a side hustle or Airbnb that started as a side hustle and say, hey, I could do that. But that requires a lot of discipline. It also requires a lot of time and sometimes a lot of money. You want to understand what your ROI potentially is going to be, return on investment, of course. I spoke to somebody who said she was deciding between pursuing a side hustle as a copy editor or a makeup artist, and she only had 6 hours a week for her side hustle. So with copy editing, she made $50 an hour, and as a makeup artist, she could make $80 an hour. But here's the thing, you and I both know, I wish we could have our makeup done from afar, but you have to travel to your client's house, so that cut into her potential earning.
Yeah, I wish I could just walk through a cloud and it goes on. You know, wouldn't that be nice?
No.
Someone come up with that, please. That's a side hustle. The one thing I will tell you, Nicole, that it has become easier, I think, for folks to connect with these sorts of things is that there are so many apps out there now that anybody with any skill can sign up and they connect you with clients for whether you're a magician, whether you're a teacher and you can do tutoring on the side. My daughter just took a singing lesson yesterday from this wonderful lady we'd never met before who had this just beautiful spirit about her and gave her her first singing lesson. And she says this is what she does now. It's her passion and she loves it. And this is the way she makes money now. It's interesting to see. Do you have any like platforms or because I think people say, okay, I've identified what it is I like to do and I can do. Now, how do I find customers? How do I find people to connect with? Would you recommend those tech platforms?
Absolutely. Like Upwork would be a great option to start with. Fiverr is another option. And then if you have a specific niche, there's likely a community around that. Where did you find your daughter's new tutor?
My husband found it, and it's one of those sites I hadn't used before. He said it, and I'd never heard of it. So it might be one of those.
Yeah, and those are great options. The more niche, the better, too. If you think, oh, gosh, well, I went to college for, you know, Southeast art studies or whatnot. You know, there is somebody out there who is looking for help there. We can all teach somebody something, and the folks will pay for that. So absolutely, those niche communities are for singing lessons or woodworking or glass blowing or whatnot. And I think, you know, people are valuing experiences more and really socializing themselves with these types of sites. So the demand there is higher than ever before.
What's the number one question you get asked with people say, okay, I'm in, I'm going to do this. What are they, what's the next question?
Most of the stuff is actually not sexy questions around, do I set up an entity like an LLC or a corporation or what are my taxes like? And all that, you know, stuff is not the most fun to think about, but it's true. You should have an emergency fund of 6 to 9 months in the bank saved if you are thinking of leaving your full-time job for your side hustle. And then you want to budget out what you might need to actually turn that hobby into a business. You know, LLCs are not cheap either. And so you want to make sure that all of your ducks are in a row that way, because you don't want to be hit with a tax bill or something like that later on.
The details. I know you blog about all this kinds of stuff. You have so much information. Nicole, can you direct us where we go? Check it out.
Yeah, you can head over to NicoleLappin.com or find me wherever social media is served at Nicole Lappin, or listen to our daily show, Money Rehab, where I answer all of these types of questions.
Well, that's awesome. One person who doesn't need another side hustle. You are supremely busy, and I'm so happy you made time for us. We were trying to connect for a little bit, but thank you, Nicole, for the advice. Come on again sometime.
Anytime. Money never sleeps. Neither do I. I started at the Merck, and I am always grateful.
Oh, that's awesome.
School of hard knocks there. Yeah.
I know you did. Thank you, Nicole.